Yellow, look!
I'm walking here! I'm walking!
Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Wednesday, to get you through your commute, to get you through the coronavirus crisis. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. We're live on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. We got a lot to get to. We only have an hour left to do it. We are hours away from the stay-at-home order. We're going to tell you how to prepare. GOP gubernatorial candidate Anton Sokurov is going to stop by to discuss whether or not he thinks the governor has been doing the right thing. Plus, we're going to go behind the scenes of one restaurant's struggle. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Your health.
So the stay-at-home order officially goes into place across the state for not just us as individuals, but any of you as business owners, goes into effect at midnight. Here's what this means. After tonight, you're told to stay in your home unless you have to leave for essential services. Essential services meaning going to the grocery store, going to the pharmacist, going to the doctor's office. Yes, you can go for a walk. You can go for a bike ride. So long as you're practicing social distancing. What that does not mean, as I see it suddenly became sunny and nice outside, it does not mean going down to Alki Beach. It does not mean going over to Port Defiance, at Point Defiance, and just chilling with a whole bunch of... It does not mean you should be going for a hike with 20 other people. It means stay indoors unless you have to leave. This is 2020. I don't want to hear anyone talking about self-isolation being tough. You have access to conversations, to video teleconferencing with anyone, not just in Washington State, but around the world. You have access to a bunch of entertainment. You have access to this radio show and podcast, which, by the way, you can subscribe to by texting the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. You have options at your disposal to keep yourself entertained. Now let's talk about the business side, the economic side, because yes, that is going to hurt. Not everyone is able to work digitally. Not everyone is able to telecommute. I get it. The good news is the president has been working hard. Republicans have been working hard to get this $2 trillion stimulus package done. The vote is supposed to happen shortly. It's expected to pass. Is it perfect? No. You want to know why? Because we're talking about politicians and they never do anything perfectly. You're going to have some help locally. Some people are going to struggle and it's going to be tough. It is true. But the more of you who listen to the guidance, who follow what we're being told, not just locally, but nationally from the Trump administration, the more of you who listen, the less amount of pain we're going to experience. And that's really important. People are complaining right now and they're saying, you know what? Why should we do this if it means it's going to destroy our economy? Well, we're doing it, okay? We're doing it right now. Nothing you say complaining about whether or not it's worth what it is that's happening to our economy is worth. Doesn't matter. It is happening. So you can be a bigger part of the problem and make this last longer by not listening, or you could realize it is happening. You don't have to be that hero that you think you are in your head. And you can sit tight for 2 weeks so we can get this over with. That's all that they're asking of you. Now, the president nationally hopes to get things back up and running by Easter. We'll see whether or not that happens, but it's not going to happen here. And it's definitely not going to happen here within a reasonable amount of time if you're not going to listen. Now, there's some folks who worry about whether or not they're going to have access to food or goods during this time period. Well, a local trucker was on with our sister station. And he says, yeah, you know what? Let's be honest. We've slowed down some of the deliveries in the area, but most of the supplies that you actually need, you're going to get. His name is Jesse Renard. He works for Posey Brothers. He says most warehouses that he has visited all across the state have the supplies they need. Stores have increased orders of certain products because a lot of you have decided to go in and hoard all the toilet paper you can find for some reason. Not entirely sure I understand that. Beyond, there was this story about how psychologically, when we panic, we go for some staples, even if those staples are not necessarily warranted during the type of crisis that you're panicked about. But the good news is you've got it. The vital supplies, including supplies for hospitals, it's coming. It's there. Now, I want to talk briefly about a story we're running exclusively at KTTH.com about the potential for price gouging at a company in Washington State. They're based out of Ferndale. They've got offices in Renton as well. A janitorial products company. Their president, Rick Anderson of Anderson Paper and Packaging, sent an email to his sales staff saying he was going to raise paper towel and toilet paper sales to a 50% margin. Now, one of the reasons he cites, according to the emails that I have obtained, is that he says these products are, quote, like gold right now. Now, this raises concerns of price gouging. This is not simply the market dictating prices. That's not what this is about. The market normally gets to dictate the prices, but we're going through a public health emergency, and it would be illegal to either engage in price gouging, if that's what this is, and I'm not saying that yet, and or some kind of unfair business practice. And remember, this is happening as both the Attorney General here in Washington and Bob Ferguson, and for the U.S. in Bill Barr, have ramped up their push to go after companies engage in this sort of coronavirus price gouging. Now, Rick Anderson of Anderson Paper and Packaging, like many companies, he is dealing with the economic realities and product availability during a public health crisis. In this internal email that he sent, he wrote that paper towels and toilet tissue provider Von Drelli, quote, has cut our orders on towel and tissue, and therefore we need to raise all towel and tissue sales to 50% margin until this industry comes back to normal. And he argued that, quote, they're like gold right now, so we can't give it away at existing price levels. Now, maybe you have no problem with that language, but someone in this email chain did. Because less than 20 minutes after Rick Anderson sent that email, someone responded arguing that this move should be reconsidered. He said, quote, maybe new customers, but to screw existing is pretty short-sighted, and customers have long memories. Now, Rick Anderson, the president of this company, he's seen in the screenshot replying, we're not screwing anyone. I take offense to that language. He goes on to argue that the supply chain of paper towels and tissues, quote, has been interrupted drastically and everyone has been put on allocation. Now, it's certainly possible that in this certain circumstance, that is true. I don't know the context yet. We'll get to that in a second. But remember, nationally, we are being told over and over and over again, across the board, everyone is saying that we do not have a supply chain problem. He goes on to say this is called force majeure in the industry, and all price contract can be set aside until the national crisis is over. Now, the employee quickly responded, when it comes to necessity items like TP, capitalism has no place. Now, I don't think this is a problem with capitalism, though. So I reached out to Rick Anderson for context to his emails because I wanted to be fair. I understand that sometimes when screenshots are provided, even though in this case I saw what I believe to be the full string of emails, it could be a little bit misleading. He could say his margin is right now 49% and he's going up to 50%. Like, there is a lot of context that's missing, and I wanted to do a fair job in talking about this. And so I asked him via email if he could give me some details. I quoted a part of the email. This was his response. That email was taken out of context, and due to the standard legal disclaimer after my auto signature, it should not have been shared with anyone outside my company. Please follow the instructions in the disclaimer and delete the email. That then puts me on a little bit of a high alert of, okay, you said that it was taken out of context. He's referring to, you know, Producer Peyton, we all have it in here. We put little disclaimers at the bottom of our emails that say, please don't forward this on. You want to know the truth? It doesn't mean anything.
No,
now, internally, it can mean something, but obviously I don't have to delete the email because you put some stupid little signature at the end of it. So I responded and I asked him if he could then provide me the context. Because again, I legitimately want to be fair here. His response: I have no time to discuss this. I am too busy taking care of customers' needs. I am wondering at this point if customers' needs mean you're making more money off of the crisis, if I'm being honest. Now, I asked him two more times, I think, after that, and he just stopped responding. I don't know whether or not there's more context that explains this away, but I can tell you that price gouging is illegal, although we don't have a price gouging statute in the state of Washington. Now, it could be a violation of the Consumer Protection Act, what he's doing, but this email alone, these emails do not prove that, to be clear. Because I reached out to Rob McKenna on his website for his law firm, Oric. He's got a whole big deal about how you can actually prove something is a violation of the Consumer Protection Act. And essentially, this is what happens if you want to make that kind of case. Number one, you would need evidence that the increased prices are actually being charged. And of course, I have none of that evidence. He didn't respond to me on that. You would need a customer to file a complaint with the state. Something, by the way, Bob Ferguson's office is encouraging if someone feels something has gone awry. And the company could come back and say, hey, actually, our suppliers are charging more than they are. And that's why we have to lift our prices too. Now, there's no evidence that that's happening versus in these emails. But again, I don't know. I want to do what's right. But it also means I want to make sure that if someone is doing something wrong at a time of crisis, we shine a spotlight on it. And I do think that there are some questions here that the public is owed answers to. So if you want to help me put a spotlight on this story, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770, and I'm going to send you a link to my story. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So it's not news that restaurants around the state are hurting right now. So what exactly can be done to help? Desiree Aylesworth is the owner of Wild Mountain Cafe. It's in the Crown Hill neighborhood of Seattle, and Desiree joins me now. Desiree, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So since the orders have come in from the governor, and this is even before fully implementing the stay-at-home order, what has happened to your business?
We have just seen a drastic decline. Thankfully, we have our core set of regular customers that have remained loyal to us throughout this process. But definitely at least a quarter of our typical sales and basically temporarily had to lay off our very small staff of eight. Wow. Until we can reopen again. So it's been pretty dramatic, you know. I am a woman, owned business and ran, and it's just as detrimental to not only us, just other businesses in the neighborhood. You know, I'm seeing places close their doors, and we're thankful to still be here, but it's definitely stressful day in and day out.
So take us through the decision on the staff, because obviously that must have been incredibly difficult for you, but it was a move that was necessary.
It's very true. I had been in conversation with all of them leading up to this. I would say, you know, since the beginning of March, we definitely had started to see a decline daily, weekly, that type of thing. And so all of them were very aware of the situation. And as it is in most service industry jobs, a lot of people had other jobs as well. So people that were able to have been relying on those for a main source of income, things like that in the meantime. But definitely breaks my heart because they are the reason I'm here 100%. In the meantime, it's just me. My husband is the chef, and we have our girls with us every day since school's not in, and we are just doing our best to make ends meet so that we don't actually have to close the doors for good. But it is a day-by-day case at this point.
Desiree Aylesworth is the owner of Wild Mountain Cafe, thewildmountaincafe.com, for information on this restaurant. You cut down your dinner hours. You're now open for breakfast and lunch. So in what other ways have you adapted to try to survive at this point?
Definitely doing the curbside pickup, offering delivery just through ourselves instead of a third party like Grubhub or Uber or something like that. So myself, my husband, and one other employee, our kitchen manager, have taken that on. social advertising, social media, pushing it on the daily, reaching out, emailing people, just asking for help, buying gift certificates, that type of thing. Basically anything to get our name out there right now.
So you've said that you've tried to get a grant, you've tried to get loan help either from the city or the state, but it's not really been successful for your business, correct?
Correct. For the most part, there seems to be some limitations as far as what's offered. You know, it's no secret that Mayor Durkin announced there's, I think, $1.5 million in the City of Seattle fund, but it's to, quote-unquote, eligible small businesses, that being five or less employees, or like Amazon just rolled out with their grant, and it has to be, you know, Southlake Union. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we just keep falling short of help. There are loan help, but having to pay that back, you know?
Yeah. What's your conversation been like either with the city or your council member?
Basically, they're just lending a helpful hand with resources, applying for loans, things like that, which I understand. Everybody kind of seems to be on the same level of apologetic and wanting to help, but not really knowing or being able to at this point. So we definitely are appreciative of everything and, you know, yeah, not turning a blind eye that we're not alone in this. You know, it's all small businesses being affected. Definitely just reaching out on every level possible to see where we can get help. And it may just be taking us breaking down those doors and calling over and over to get through to the right person to be able to do so.
Yeah, and again, if folks want to help and order some food, thewildmountaincafe.com, if you're not in the area and you know people in the area of Crown Hill in Seattle, you should be recommending they check out this business and so many other businesses. And you wrote a letter to our station, or all three of our stations, basically sort of outlining some of your thoughts. And it caught my attention for a number of reasons because, you know, yes, you are going through this like many other businesses, but there was something in that, you know, you have two daughters who are now spending time home, and you said that you're trying to keep from them the financial trouble that you're in. How hard has that been?
It's pretty hard. You know, my oldest daughter is in kindergarten, and with schools being released, they are definitely not immune to the situation and what's going on. And she knows that this is different, you know, that mom and dad being at work and them having to come with us is not the norm. So us just putting on a brave face and, you know, knowing that everything will be okay at the end of the day definitely takes a toll on her too. So it's a fine balance of, you know, homeschooling, parenting, mm-hmm. That sort of teamwork that we have to maintain and trying to keep a business afloat at the same time. And I just, you know, my mom was a small business owner growing up too, and I always saw her work hard and just never give up. And so that definitely instilled in me, and we're just trying to teach the same thing to them at the same time. Just to never give up, really. So, but it's definitely a scary time for a lot of people right now.
It is, Desiree. We're talking with Desiree Aylesworth. She's the owner of Wild Mountain Cafe in Crown Hill, thewildmountaincafe.com. If you want to do your part and help the struggling business, you know, like I said at the onset of the interview, we're just now getting into the stay-at-home order tonight at midnight, which is going to dramatically change life for even more people. That's going to last at least 2 weeks. How much longer do you think you could sustain this business given what you've experienced in the last few weeks?
You know, every day is different. We are still seeing orders through the curbside and the delivery, so we're very grateful for that. Again, I cannot thank our loyal customers enough for choosing us with all of the other businesses open and struggling to stay open at this time. I think it will be okay. We will make it. Again, I heard from my staff at this time, but we have provided them with the resources, you know, the unemployment and things like that. They're doing the standby. I know it's not enough to make ends meet, but, you know, we have offered meals and anything we can think of in the meantime to try to keep everybody together. And so far, everybody is hanging in there, but we're definitely hoping that this comes to an end safely for everybody sooner rather than later.
So what's the dish I should order when I go to the Wild Mountain Cafe?
We are definitely known for our Eggs Benedict. We make our sauce here in-house. It's fresh. It's delicious. And I would say that's a go-to for sure.
There you go.
And then we home make cinnamon rolls on the weekends. another definitely a driving force as well. We sell out almost every weekend. So
nice. Well, let's help sell those out. Let's get those Eggs Benedicts. Go
That's
to thewildmountaincafe.com. Thewildmountaincafe.com. We've been talking with their owner, Desiree Aylesworth. Desiree, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We wish you the absolute best of luck.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. And, you know, we just want to say good luck to everybody else out there and all the other restaurants struggling. You know, just hang in there.
Hang in there. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, we're going to continue our coverage of the coronavirus crisis right here on KTTH. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Advocacy groups all across Washington are calling out the State Department of Health and the UW Medical Center for what they believe is discrimination against people living with disabilities. The coronavirus guidance that was put out by the state, these groups argue, will ration equipment and treatment to promote people who are not dealing with a disability, which leaves those patients who are dealing with a disability at risk of higher mortality. Ivanova Smith is the chair of Self-Advocates and Leadership. It's called SAIL, S-A-I-L. They are a statewide coalition focused on developmental disabilities. She joins me now. Welcome to the show, Ivanova.
Hello, thank you for inviting me onto the show. As a chair of Self-Advocates and Leadership, we are fully led by people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Our membership range from members from all across the state. And we also partner with People First of Washington, which is another self-advocacy mm-hmm. organization that has over 1,000 members.
So help us understand the complaint that was filed with federal health officials, because it seems to imply that there's essentially going to be like a death panel to decide who lives or dies.
Yes, so this is something that's very concerning to self-advocates. We know there's a long history of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities being denied care. We know we've had to fight to get laws in place to protect our rights to gain organs. And so we see these rationing methods as a form of eugenics to say that, you know, some people are more worthy of treatment than others. And we don't believe that's right. People with disabilities have the same value and the same contribution to our mm-hmm. community and our society as anyone else. We are workers. We have families. We have people who love us. We have people who care for us, and we care for others, and we are leaders in our communities. And so we're really concerned about these policies that could really hurt the lives of people with disabilities, and that we feel it'd be discrimination to deny care to people with IBD, especially when we know that the virus affects our community even more. Yeah. Many of our members have a weakened immune systems and would be more affected by the virus. And so we need to make sure that we have those extra resources for everyone.
Ivanova Smith is the chair of Self-Advocates and Leadership, also known as SAIL. We're talking about guidance coming from the Washington State Department of Health and the UW Medical Center, essentially deciding who gets treatment in cases of emergency. Now, one of the pieces of guidance they give essentially says in cases of emergency, in cases where there is not a lot of equipment up for use, they will take into account a patient's age, their health, and their chances of survival in determining who they would give, for example, a ventilator to if they're short. There's some people are going to listen to that guidance and say, okay, well, that seems reasonable. So where is it not reasonable?
We feel that it should be on a first-come, first-served basis, our lottery system. We feel it should not be based on a person's identity, which is things like age or disability status or health status. It should be based on a more fair system that does not single out people based on if they have a disability or whatever age they are.
Is that different than what's going on right now? Let's say there was an emergency, God forbid, and there were, you know, a large accident and a whole bunch of people are coming into the ER at the exact same time. Don't the doctors on the ground use their discretion to see who they can save, who has the higher likelihood of being saved?
So it's a really tricky question, yeah. And there's like a lot of complexities with that, and it's really, you know, where is that arbitrary line, and, you know, who is considered less valuable than another person? And so, you know, these ethical questions, they are very complex and very tricky, but we feel that it is, you know, a human life is a human life. And a human life should not be put above another human life based on things like age and disability. Because whether a person is 60 to 20 or non-disabled to disabled, all values the same.
And I think that is a fair position that you're taking. It is, you're right, it is a very complex issue. I'm glad you guys are paying attention to that. The website for the Self-Advocates and Leadership is SAIL, S-A-I-L, SAILCoalition.org. We've been talking with Ivanova Smith. Ivanova, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. Take care.
So, look, that issue, this issue that we're discussing is an important one. And you know what? Kudos to her for acknowledging it is pretty complex of an issue to figure out. You know, it's happening at the same time. We talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, and it's been on my blog all day. We've got services that right now are being provided, whereas others are not. And in a lot of ways, it's based on subjective sort of worth from the governor, right? It's not being necessarily dictated by whether or not we have a right to engage in a certain behavior or a right to life, which I know folks on the left don't necessarily like. But it reminds me, as we ended up talking with Ivanova, that issue reminds me of what's going on right now as it relates to abortion and as it relates to gun rights. Those two are actually very connected in the sense that right now, in this stay-at-home order, the governor has said that non-essential businesses can not stay open. If you're not listed as an essential business, essential to operate at a time of a public health crisis, you have to close your doors. Now, one could very easily argue that the reason why you're keeping the media open is because we are essential and because we have a specific carve-out as far as our rights of expression and a free press. I'm glad that we're open. But so, too, I would argue gun shops should be protected. Gun shops under this order by the governor have to close up. They have to close down after midnight tonight. And I think that has a very specific impact, a very detrimental impact on the rights of Washingtonians to utilize their gun rights, right of self-protection. Self-protection at a time when it's incredibly important. People are panicked. People do crazy things when they're panicked. We have officers not being allowed to keep criminals in jail, bookings for misdemeanors in Seattle and King County as a whole, overwhelmingly, will be rejected. Bookings, meaning once you do the arrest, they don't necessarily get put in jail, waiting for a judge to put bail on whatever crime they committed, whatever misdemeanor crime they committed outside of the small listing of things that they will still book. And so you end up arresting a prolific offender who's out of jail moments after arrest. He will still eventually get charged, or she will get charged, but they're not doing any jail time at all. And oftentimes when we're talking about prolific offenders, the only thing that's keeping the public safe, the only thing that keeps the public safe is the time that they're spent in jail awaiting a judge who will just kick them out anyway. And so we're saying no to, specifically, we're saying no to gun shops and our Second Amendment rights, but abortion clinics, abortion services, elective abortion services, are allowed to move forward. They are considered essential. That's an interesting point, given the conversation we just had with someone who is living with a developmental disability, talking about how she values life. and all life should be valued. And I agree with that. All life 100% should be valued. All innocent life. But when it comes to abortion, I guess we throw that idea out. We're not so concerned here in Washington State. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. When we come back, Anton Sakharov is going to stop by. He's running for governor as a Republican. We're going to chat about the stay-at-home order and whether or not he thinks the governor is acting appropriately. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. We are hours away from full implementation of Governor Jay Inslee's stay-at-home directive. It starts today at midnight, tonight at midnight. Joining me on the line with his reaction as we go and check in with all of the GOP gubernatorial candidates, Anton Sakharov. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me. What an interesting time we're living in.
It is. Obviously, we're dealing with the spread of the coronavirus. The intent from the governor is to try to slow it down. Some people have said a stay-at-home directive is unnecessary. What say you?
Well, I'm sure the governor has more details than what we have as a public, but the virus is real. The virus is definitely a serious health hazard to the population. I do think that we do need to slow it down, as some have been saying, bend the curve to make sure that our healthcare system can actually function properly. I don't agree with every specific point that was made of how it's being implemented, how the businesses are being selected. I don't agree with that. But, you know, I would have done it a little bit different, but I do think it is necessary. To make sure that we do bend the curve.
Okay, so big picture, you agree on some of the details, you disagree. Let's go through some of the details where you disagree. What would you have done differently?
Well, I think I would have started off a little bit earlier and started off with anybody who's over 65 should stay home and isolate. I think that's irregardless of what the businesses are. This is the most vulnerable population, and I want to make sure that they're safe. So that's one. Some of the businesses that are selected to be closed down don't make sense. For example, real estate can continue to sell homes, but they can't show properties, even by appointment, which makes no sense. And you know, if that is not allowed, essentially the real estate market is going to be shut down. So that's just a few nuances that I think we should have approached it a little bit differently. Overall, what I would have done is making sure that we ask all businesses to decrease the hours and maybe spread the employees so that they can work different hours, making sure that we don't have more than six employees at the same time in one room. That approach would have been allow the businesses to function, but limit the interaction between employees.
Just joining me, we're talking with Anton Sakharov. He is running for governor as a Republican. We're talking about the coronavirus crisis and the reaction coming from Governor Jay Inslee tonight at midnight. Officially, the shelter-in-place issue goes in place all across the state of Washington, which means only essential businesses are allowed to operate. As long as you are on that unofficial, non-essential, you can operate so long as you can do so via telecommuting. And that's kind of an interesting point. I've got a blog up right now, Anton, at ktth.com, about how gun shops are deemed non-essential at a time of a crisis. Of course, gun shops allow people to fully engage in their gun rights, their constitutionally protected gun rights, and yet elective abortions are allowed to continue. How do you make sense of that?
This is the biggest concern. I'm not a fan of government deciding what is essential for individuals. For example, retail stores, food stores are considered essential, but this is probably the biggest way that this virus is being spread. You go to the supermarket, there's hundreds of people there, and people are getting sick. Mass transit is another example where people are likely to get sick because they're riding a bus and somebody coughs. So I don't agree with the way the businesses were selected, which ones are essential, which ones are not. I think it's not for the government to decide. I think what we needed to do is, regardless of what type of business it is, to limit the interaction between employees and customers. You know, if there's a mom and pop shop and that gets 10 customers a day, that probably doesn't carry any risk than a warehouse where no customers can actually go in, but you have 20 people interacting and potentially getting sick.
But let me push back a little bit on one point you just made. So it's not up to the government to make these decisions, but you also agreed, not necessarily in the timing, that the governor was right to put in place a general type of restriction. And you yourself just said, you know, maybe for certain businesses, it's you only allow 6 people at a time in a room, or you change some of the hours. And so clearly the government, in your view, has some role in instituting these restrictions. So where do you go? What's the bar of them going too far?
It is a tough, there's some gray area. And the problem is when you have a government deciding always a list of businesses that can or cannot function based on some criteria that is not scientific, it's hard to determine. I agree that we need to limit the spread. But I think what we were doing before, prior to this mandate, is a lot of people were actually taking it seriously and staying home, while there are people who didn't take it seriously at all, and they went to beaches, parks, who essentially contributed to this, contributed for our governor to take the steps he took. So I think we do need to educate the public that the problem is real, the virus is real. At the same time, I disagree the way we selected, or the government selected which businesses are essential, which ones are not. Again, you can always find businesses that could be considered essential, like gun shops, absolutely. And I think what we needed to do is statewide to make sure that we're not allowing the virus to spread by limiting the interaction, irrelevant of what the business industry is. I think that's the number one goal, because we need to make sure that our healthcare system is functioning, is not overwhelmed. That's really what it is by bending the curve that a lot of people are talking about.
Anton Sokurov is joining me on the line. He's the GOP candidate for governor, one of the top 5 that were featured at the KTTH debate. His website, by the way, antonsokurov.com, SAKHAROV. Let's talk about what happens after this is over. We're going to very clearly be able to tackle this problem. It might take some time, but we're going to get there. In the meantime, there are to your point, a lot of businesses that are going to be hurting. So once things get back to relative normalcy, what does the state legislature have to do to address the industries that were hit so hard?
I actually think we need to act before this ends. There's definitely people that are hurt. They're unemployed already. There's businesses that are shutting down. So I urge the legislature and the governor to act today. We need to help the unemployed. We need to help the small businesses, essentially, who are getting hurt and are being shut down by delaying the B&O tax deadline, by suspending the real estate property taxes for this April timeframe for those who are unemployed. I think that, in a minimum, would help at least decrease the current situation. But I agree, we're going to come out of this with several businesses or even industries that are going to be hurt really badly, and we need to help the people out. So I know there's a federal work being done to help individuals, but I think at the state level, we need to also make sure that our businesses are back thriving after this is over.
Last question for you. Let's turn our attention to the homelessness population, which is still going to remain an issue over the course of the next several months as we're dealing with this. What should be done with that at-risk community when it comes to coronavirus, and obviously the same risks that they had before coronavirus?
I think we're facing a really big challenge with the homelessness population, because we definitely need to start testing, and I know we're lacking tests for everyone. In fact, what I found out, there's been news published last week that there's drive-through testing available for folks to take. What I learned was it's not for everybody, and those who are not at risk are going to be denied testing because there's not enough tests. So we're going to have the same problem with the homeless population getting tested. And without testing, we really don't know how big the issue is. So we definitely need to start testing those who are on the streets to really understand the impact of this virus. and making sure that those who are sick are not getting everybody else contagious.
There you go. Anton Sokurov is running for governor. He's one of the top five GOP candidates. If you want to watch him debate the other four candidates, go to KTTH.com. And, of course, check out his website, AntonSokurov.com, S-A-K-H-A-R-O-V. Anton, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Stay safe.
You as well. You've been listening to The Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really, really do appreciate it. We will see you tomorrow. Plus, later on tonight, we're going to have a Facebook live chat. Make sure you go to Facebook.com/Jason Rants Show. Make sure you follow and give me a like so you get the alert once we go live. Facebook.com/Jason Rants Show. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.